We saw it last year. People want to help. The Austrian civil society is great. There's still so many Ukrainians living in private housing. Like, also the government is counting on it. They're really counting on it that NGOs like ours are helping. Especially when the Ukrainian war started, it was really, everyone was like, we need to help them, we need to help them. It was like, yes, perfect. That's the exact idea and the exact ambition we need also for the other people there. So there's a problem. Why is there a problem? Okay, we don't care. We just do it. We just do something to help in the situation. And this is what we try to do until today.
Inside Impact.
Der Podcast mit Wirkung. Welcome back to Inside Impact and welcome to our third episode focusing on the civil society in light of the situation in Ukraine. Today we have a closer look on the role of how organizations supporting refugees in Austria were influenced by the war. Together with the support of Maren Riebe of Utebock Refugee Project, we explore what support is needed and how the situation for refugees in Austria could be improved. Utebock Refugee Project is an organization founded by Austrian educator and one of the most prominent civil society actors in Austria, Utebock. It provides support for people who needed to flee their country in education, housing, immediate care, but also in other fields. Maren Riebe provides us with more information. The interview has been recorded on the 3rd of March. All right, so I'm standing, sitting, whatever, here now with Maren Riebe from Utebock Refugee Project, in German, yes. Utebock Flüchtlingsprojekt. Thank you so much for joining us today. Would you like to quickly introduce yourself to our listeners?
Yes, hello. I'm Maren and I'm working at Flüchtlingsprojekt Utebock since about 3.5 years as a press officer, and I'm very happy to be here. Thanks for the invitation.
Yeah, thank you so much for joining. You're press officer of Utebock Refugee Project. What is the project, which is basically an NGO, all about?
Our NGO helps refugees in Vienna. We are local refugee aid since over 20 years, and we help with the different parts. We have a housing program, we have a cancellation program, we have education program, and immediate aid, obviously, because we just try to figure out what the people need and help in the moment.
It's a very broad field you're actually supporting refugees with. Now, the name Utebock is, of course, in Austria, a very prominent one. Like, Utebock, from my understanding, has been one of the civil society agents, maybe even within the country. But maybe for some of our listeners, it is not quite clear who Utebock was and what she did. What is the organization's history?
So Utebock was an educationer. That was her job. She came to Vienna from Linz and worked in a house, which is also now the Utebock House, where she was an educationer, or even like the leader of the house for young men being in training, like boys and men going into job training. We call it Gesellenwohnheim. And so she was there. And in the 90s, beginning of the 90s, it started that other organizations or authorities sent young unaccompanied men from countries like ex-Yugoslavia or different African countries to her to take care of them, because the authorities, like the other organizations, did not know what to do. We're like, okay, there is no rules for them. We don't have any support system for them. Please take care of them, because you already have these young boys and men in your house. So that's how she started. And she got a feeling for what's actually going wrong in Austria with young refugees or refugees in general. And then she got an activist about human rights and refugee rights in the whole 90s. And then in 2002, she went into pension age. And then it was the same time when she officially started the NGO. So that we founded in 2002. We had 20-year anniversary last year. From there, she was in different offices in Vienna. So she was in the office of SOS Mitmensch at the beginning, and then she had some offices in the second district. And around 2010, I was aware that the old house, the Gesellenwohnheim, was closed down. It was empty, and with the support of a big donor, we got the house, and he bought the house for us and made the whole renovations. And since 2012, we're in the Utopak house in Wien Favoriten, where we can help directly there. And she was back at her, where she started her work. And in 2018, she also died there. So it was really like, that was her place and her rooms where she, where her was her bedroom and her office are still very special places in the house where like our oldest colleagues are there. And like, that's the spirit of Utopak we have here.
And the spirit is living on, of course, and is living on also through the organization and through the work you're doing. But still, so it was very clear that that's Utopak then and your organization as a whole also witnessed that there is need for additional care and additional aid for people who are coming into our country. What was maybe the motivation behind this? What was visible? What was lacking?
So we have an official asylum system, obviously, in Austria since probably Genfer Flüchtlingskonvention or something like this. So there's always like official ways of doing stuff, but not every person fits into these programs and not every person fits with the criteria and there is not a solution for everyone. And she would, could really see that there were people were forgotten in the system and they fell through the holes of bureaucracy. And that was always her attempt. Like if there is a problem, like her way of helping was always like pragmatic. Like there's a problem, let's find a solution. For example, when you weren't registered with the city, like a Meldeadresse, then you were falling out of the asylum seeking process. And obviously some people are really struggling finding a place to stay. And there is some programs for homeless people so they can register and get their mail there. But there was not there for refugees at that point. So she founded it. And until today, it's part of our social counseling that people can register at our house as a homeless person. And so they can receive their mail, which is the official mail by the state, but also officially from their families and get in contact with their families. And yeah, this is her way of helping. It was her way of helping and is until today our way of helping. So there's a problem. Why is there a problem? Okay, we don't care. We just do it. We just do something to help in the situation. And this is what we tried to do until today.
In you, maybe motivational speak, being solution-oriented about it, right?
Exactly.
So this is the whole spirit, which is very nice, of course. Now you say there are different focal points, maybe. Utopak Refugee Project is targeting and is trying to find solutions for, which is basically housing, counseling,
education
and
immediate aid.
So how does this play out? Could you give maybe one or two examples of these fields, what Utopak is really doing there?
Yeah. So our core concept is the housing. So it was also our old NGO name. So it's really like the Wohnprojekt. So it's really, we try to bring people into housing because it's nothing worse than having homeless people. No one is interested to have refugees living on the street. And so we at Utopak House, we have 90 spots for people who can live at our house. So 77 apartments. Apartments, it's actually like a room. It's a room with a bed and a little closet and a little table, and that's it. We have shared bathrooms, we have shared kitchens, we have shared toilets. So it's more like a, like someone said, it's like a student housing or like a hostel or something. In addition, we have about 50 external flats. So in total, we take care of about 360 people now after Ukrainians. We added a lot of capacity. And so this is our core thing. And we really help these people, especially we have quite some people living with us for over 10 years. So they moved with Utopak into the Utopak house because there's these cases where there is no solution. No one knows what to do with them. And we try to help them. So it's a lot of people who are really without any support living in our house. And yeah, that's like the people we'll be like create a little family in the house, like really, because it is so open with all this shared space that they're really, it's nice to see that people are like living there. Is really, it's a space for living. Every one of them has a social worker on their side, so we have a team of 5 social workers taking care of their needs, like orientations, the same what our open counseling is doing, help the people to orientate. So okay, you come here, maybe you don't speak the language yet, and it's like, where do I have to sign up my kids for school or for kindergarten? Is it allowed to go to kindergarten? From what age they're allowed to go to kindergarten? What is free? What is paying? There was someone knocking on the door, was from GIS. What is GIS? No idea what is GIS, mm-hmm. right? So this kind of stuff, we're helping them, also obviously helping them being on their side when they're struggling within their asylum seeking process or when they already got rejected, which is like the majority of the people we're helping got rejected and are in this nimbus of, I don't know what's going on, where are we going from here? And this is where we try to help. We have an also legal service since a couple of months because there are so many people in need that something's happening on their cases. And yeah, this is really our core project. So
mm-hmm. maybe also for our international listeners, GIS is the Austrian broadcasting, maybe fee. Let's call it fee, which every household has to pay in case they have a receiver or something.
Radio, TV.
They
really like to knock on doors.
For our public media.
At least this year. Let's see what's happening next year.
Exactly, yes. Something may be coming up there.
Yeah.
Now, you say, of course, this immediate aid is a very important thing, especially when it comes to orientation. But I suppose also when it comes to emotional challenges those people came across when fleeing from their country, right? Because there are so many different reasons people need to flee. One of them, of course, very prominently now being wars. Mm-hmm. So how is Uttabak Refugee Project also supporting in this regard?
So obviously we have always, we call it the open ear, right? As you say in German, ein offenes Ohr haben. So we have our colleagues, and it was really good that also since I'm there, we could really raise the amount of people helping. So that's when our team of five people just being there and listening, like trying to understand what's going on and what's the problems the people have. So it's never just like person XY living in room 102. It's really like, I know your story. I know where we're struggling, where you're struggling, and trying to be there. Unfortunately, we don't have a psychological support here because we all know it's like psychologists are where in Vienna or like in Austria. It's a bit, it's hard. The demand is not keeping up, or the offer is not keeping up with the demand. That would be obviously great. But at least we try to be there and even like connect. Like last year, we had this case where we needed psychological support after we had an attack at the house of some far right extremists at the house. And then we needed support, and we really are happy that we have a support system where we can like go social media and say, hey, we really need a psychologist right now. And then people came and helped us, especially with the kids, to figuring it out and navigate through. Yeah. But would be nicer if we have more, but there are obviously limited spaces also from the city of Vienna because, there's not enough psychologists, unfortunately.
At least at the moment, hopefully, or maybe this will get better in the future. Yeah. But what I hear also is really also seeing the people as what they are, namely people, right? So stories, persons behind this terrible period in their life, which they needed to overcome or are in overcoming still.
Yeah. It was really interesting to see last year, especially when the Ukrainian war started. It was really, everyone was like, we need to help them. We need to help them. It was like, yes. Perfect. That's the exact idea and the exact ambition we need also for the other people there. Because everyone wants to help because they see it. It's right in front of their eyes. There's a war. It's that close. The Syrian war is going on for 13 years, I think, or 12 years? 12 years. So people forget about it. Yeah. Or you just remember what was happening a couple of weeks ago, this huge earthquake also affecting Syrian areas, area of Kurdish people. You don't hear anything about this anymore. And then people forget. And then we have a society that says, the refugees. And we always try to say, it's not the refugees. This is Ahmed, and this is Mohammed, and this is whatever name. And there are people. And we share our daily lives. I think that's also a privilege I have in my job, that I'm really there. I'm working at even our, like, bureaucracy apartments, like our Verwaltungs parts are in Uttabak House, so I have a daily contact with these people, and we can just have a chat, and sometimes when we celebrate Christmas together, and they bring their food, and it's really like, what's your experience here, how it is now having Ramadan, how was the Iranian New Year's last week, and it's like really nice to just to more profit from the insights of other people coming from completely different areas in the world, having a completely different view on things sometimes. And that's, I really like that, to get this broader idea. And I think it would be nice for a lot of people to, like, especially through food, probably. It's the easiest way to get more awareness of a different culture. It's like, actually, it's interesting. I will, like, tell me more about this. And that's a very nice approach. People should maybe have more in mind when they read about the refugees here and the refugees coming illegally. Yeah, because there's no legal way to come. Obviously, they're coming illegally. So it's a bit tricky, all that fuss about around that topic.
But something you now mentioned, and which was very interesting to me also when we talked prior now to recording, is something of the approach of the NGO, of the Uterbork Refugee Project, which is, well, what works for one group of people can work for another group of people. So not having this, yeah, okay, Ukrainians need our support. As you said, of course they do.
Definitely.
But don't forget about others as well, right?
Yeah.
So this is something which also very much struck me when we talked. But still, of course, we here in Inside Impact are now in the middle of a focus around the situation in Ukraine and how Ukrainian people can be supported also in Austria maybe. So maybe when we talk about your NGO, how did the war in Ukraine influence your operations, actually? Were there any differences? I mean, you said already you needed to kind of deal with way more demand, right?
Yeah.
For your services. How did that turn out up until
now? It was tricky at the beginning. So we are like quite a small team. So we are about 23 employees, I think, with most of them is part-time. So when it was clear, okay, the war started, I think it was a Thursday, we had immediately like crisis meetings. So all the different departments came together. So, okay, there is now, first things first, there's more people needing help. So what can we do? Because normally we're like, okay, what's our focus group? Mostly people who don't get any other help. So, but this was like, okay, there's a lot of people needing help. We know there's going to be a lot of stuff coming from other NGOs or also from the government or from the city, but we need to help now. So they're going to stand here next week in front of our door. And that's exactly what happened. So we really checked, like, the head of our housing program. She was really checking, okay, where do we have free flats? Who is about to move out anyway? We got a lot of support also from external people, so supporters saying, hey, I have a flat. I want to give them to Ukrainian refugees. So within the shortest amount of time, we pumped up 20% of our capacity. So it was like about 60 spots. We had like just like put, like give them a space to stay, to sleep. So that was the first thing. And then we were very lucky in the time. We had one of our counseling team who spoke Russian. And it was really that we could really help them with orientating, even though we were not aware of like what's going on now. So we could really help them at the first orientation. So you have to go there. We heard it's happening there. We have former colleagues working for FSV, so we could really call them, Fonds Soziales Wien is FSV, so we can call them and say, hey, what's going on? Where do I have to go? The city was super fast with setting everything up here at Messe Wien and at, so that was good, but we could help until everything was set up. So we had a lot of people coming also in our consultation, and we could then help them overcome like the part where like city was still setting stuff up, so we could bridge over. Also, when the people living at our house was like, when you have to apply for Grundversorgung, it took a couple of weeks until this was rolling. And obviously, they got food from us, they got groceries more, and donations in kind. The kids had to go to school, they got like their school material from us, and all that kind of stuff. We also were luckily we have our Uterbork Education Center, and it's run by volunteers. So we have three people working there from our team, but the whole thing runs, all the teachers are volunteers. And by accident, by any chance, we had someone who's from Ukraine and who could set up a whole class for Ukrainians, which makes it sometimes easier when you have just one language facing you instead of 20 languages we sometimes have. So that was quite cool. So we could help them until they're finally the official offers from the city or from the country were coming, saying, okay, now you have your spot here, there's your official German class here. So we could really bridge over a lot of offers with until the whole system was running, which was incredible fast, but still, a couple of weeks when you have no money at all, a couple of weeks without any money is tough. So we could really bridge over all that
and
stuff.
Especially as we talked about beforehand, those first weeks are, of course, crucial, right? Like when it comes to orientation, when it comes to getting to know the city and getting to know, okay, what kind of support could I get here?
Exactly. What rumor is true? And then it started with Ukrainians had access. So they have a different status, right? So it was also difficult for us then to see, okay, so we supported as long as we could see the other systems are working, because then we could say, you're not part of our core group, please go somewhere else, because you have special services there that our clients normally don't get. So we really were trying to balance, like, okay, we want to help you 100%, we want to help you, but we have the big, big other groups of people who don't get any help right now, or not as much help as you. So we help while telling you, please, this is the address you have to go. This is the place we have to apply for that. Yeah, and we could really see that there were different things working. So they have this special status as Vertriebene, which is great for them, but it means also some things were easier for them, but something that's complicated. So they applied to get Grundversorgung, which was also this Grundversorgung means it's the basic care of the country gives a refugee, which means right now, because they raised it last year, it's 165 euros for housing. I never tried to fly the flat in Vienna with 165 euros for housing.
It may not be that successful.
No, so. Not really, for a single person. And it's 260 euros for all your living costs. So that means obviously clothing, food, all that kind of stuff. So that's not as much. So then the people had this 460 euros or 400, I had to do math.
400, I think 425.
Yes, 425 euros. So. And insurance, which is also very important. And then they were able to access the job market, or easier, let's say. Job market is a very weird topic since the last 2 years, but there were easier access to job markets, and also more employers were like, oh yeah, I want to support Ukrainian refugees, they can work at my place. As soon as they got that job, they fell out of Grundversorgung. So then the job has to bring so much money that you can live from it. And also a lot of women came with kids, and it's super tricky, and especially when you have no kindergarten for like a 1 year old or 2 year old. So it's quite tricky. Like, do I take the job and maybe earn 800 euros, which is still not enough to get a flat in Vienna? Or do I stay in Grundversorgung and really, really have to navigate? We had to help them navigate. So which is the better decision here? Like, yeah, so it's tricky. Yeah. Like, we have Ukrainians having like this easier status of Vertriebene, but they're in Grundversorgung. And on the other hand, if asylum seeker, they're in Grundversorgung. But if they get asylum, they're allowed to go into Mindestsicherung, mm-hmm. which is also attacked by the government by now. But that's the difference. So there is, like, obviously it's easier to be a Vertriebene person, like a Ukrainian person. But it's, on the long run, it's a bit weird why they don't get into the social system. But people are like, already, like NGOs are already pushing, please bring the people out of Grundversorgung into the normal social system, social security system.
And the Mindestsicherung, just for also our international listeners, is basically also basic need taken a little bit care of, let's put it that way.
It's the poverty line.
Yeah. So which is around...
Was it 1,100?
Yeah, something like this. So, but... Yeah. Considerably more still than it is in the
Grundversorgung.
Yeah.
Inside Impact.
I mean, I need to ask, because you said the job market is rather weird. Why do you think this is?
Job market is rather weird because we had since I started a job, and like since the 90s, it's like asylum seekers don't have access to Austrian job market. Even though the European law said when you're in the country, I think it was, correct me if I'm wrong, 6 months until like when asylum seeker is applying for asylum in the country, then by the law of the European Union, they should be allowed on the local job market within 6 months or something like this. And Austria was always like, no, we have our own law. And so you're not allowed on the Austrian job market. And then in 2021, there was the decision of the VfGH, the Verfassungsgerichtshof, saying this Klausel Bartensteiner Lass is actually illegal. People have to have access to the job market. So we were all like, oh, nice, that's cool, really good. So we can, people, because they need that. It's not just because of money. Of course, money is a topic, but it's also being like, having something to do. We all know, especially in Austria, we know the stories of Marienthal, the stories of what happens with people when they have nothing to do. And then you have people in our system, in our house, living there for 12 years, have nothing to do. And there were journalists before, whatever. And it's just like, so now I'm sitting and waiting. I try to compare it sometimes to get an understanding. It's like you're being 12 years into lockdown because you can't afford to be part of the society, because you can't afford to go into cinema or whatever. So job access would be great, like also like for the mental health, but also obviously for money-wise. And the first thing came from the Arbeitsminister Kocher was like, oh, we will find a new law that this is not going to happen. So this did not happen. So we don't have a new law. So actually we have that access. We have the feeling it's a bit tricky because then you have to do the AMS and the AMS Job Market Center has to say, okay, we don't find any other Austrian or European person who can take the job. Then some other people have to say, like a Gremium has to say, okay, we agree that this person is allowed to work. And all that has to be, the employer has to ask for it. So it's like, let's say McDonald's, it's like, hey, we want to hire these two people. Can you please give us a job market access for these people? This is okay if you're McDonald's because you're a big player. If you're like a small company trying to find employees, it's a bit tricky. So yeah, we're working on that right now to help people getting more job access because for Ukrainians, actually, it was the same. So also the companies had to ask for this allowance, which is now going to be changed in summer. So something's happening there as well. This is going to be even easier for Ukrainians. And then, yeah, we're trying to push that now. We're trying to get partners, like bigger players saying, hey, we know like IKEA has a program to support getting refugees into the job market. And they're very stubborn. They're like Bokek. Like, we like that. So, yeah. We try to see where we can do something to help our clients to have a better life here.
So still many bureaucratic barriers there to really enter the job market while it would be possible from a legislative point of view, right?
Exactly, so. Yeah. But we see differences in the states. So Vienna is a bit of a special case because Vienna has obviously a higher unemployment rate. So definitely there's more people like officially being available for the job market than in other states. So in other states, the demand is higher. Like, okay, we really, really need these people. So it's apparently a bit easier in the states.
All right. That is a good... That's great.
Good news,
right?
Yeah.
So maybe switching the topic a little bit that we talked about, of course, the very pressing issue of people needing to flee their countries and how they can be supported, but maybe also talking a little bit about your organization. So I suppose, as you said, having like 20% more capacity, that quickly comes with a lot of issues and with a lot of challenges. So what might be some current challenges you're dealing with or have been dealing with this new situation arising?
Well, obviously for our team in the housing program was quite draining time of like bureaucracy, because everyone who's moving into a house needs to be registered, needs to be, is this person, are they applied for all what they need? So for every person, as I said, we're really working orientated on the person, is everything done that can be done, and it's everything like registered and organized. So that was quite a high demand, and lucky enough, we are part of the Fonds Soziales Wien, as I said before, and so parts of our program are supported by the city of Vienna. So we are official partner of the city of Vienna and official partner in the whole refugee program, which is good. And then we got support also there, that got the capacity got pushed as well, so we could hire another person helping us with this. But it was a lot of work from our team. Also, we needed more volunteers helping up with additional slots for donations in kind. So we have a little storage room where we have all the donations in kind, and we have it works all with volunteers. So it's a great team, and so we have you can once a month you can have an appointment and you can have a look what you need, and it's like shoes, clothing, kitchenware, towels, bedding, all that kind of stuff. So we had to push that, and we had to also get additional appointments for the food donations. So that was quite an organizational thing. But also then with the new so we had a new flat. So people were like, hey, you can use my flat. But they were empty. So we had to like, okay, organize beds, bedding, who supports us also here. We had some partners on our side helping us with all the immediate stuff. On the long run, we really see, I mean, we all know one of the factors also coming from the last years of all the pandemic, but also the war is inflation. And so our prices are rising, which is hard for our clients. As I said, from the 260 euro you have for living, it's harder to organize everything with that. It's harder for us as an organization because our like energy costs skyrocketed because we pay the energy for our whole house as well as the 50 external flats. We get some of them are from FSV, so we have support here. But the ones we're taking care of ourselves, is inflation is hard. Because on the other hand, we have our supporters who are also like, we really want to donate you, but I don't have any money. I can't help as much as I actually wanted to help. So that's obviously stuff we're struggling with. It's like, how can we make it work? Because we see we have more people who are helping. And on the other hand, we have the inflation, so everything is getting more expensive. And our donors have some issues themselves, and which we can completely understand because we all have our own problems. But yeah, that's tricky.
So really the financial situation, as it is for many organizations, but also private persons, the case is something to be looked at, yeah, with a little bit of sorrow, maybe, or maybe at least with a solution-based mindset.
We're very solution-based. We try to be creative with that. So we found like a sponsorship program. So like having like even like with small amounts, but monthly help, because it helps us most. Where we have like we can plan with, we know like every month we get this amount of money, and especially for the areas which were most affected by inflation, which means we need to have a higher cost of buying food. So we have like a Gemüse Partnerschaft, like a vegetable sponsorship. So you can like if you donate like €6 a month or 10 euros a month, it's already a help, and it goes directly on the budget of our colleague who's going to do the groceries we're supporting. Because we also get groceries from the Tafel, but it's not enough for like the basic needs we want to cover. And also with the energy that you can help us with them. Because, yeah, we pay that monthly. So this is like, yeah, solution-oriented. Yeah. So here is our solution. You can help us easily with even smaller amounts and make us help more. We need help so we can help more.
Perfect. Also, for our listeners out there, there is a site on your website where donations are possible as well. We will, of course, put this in the show notes as well. So you have direct access if you feel now motivated.
Or buy a t-shirt in our box shop.
Which are very stylish. But I don't know if we're allowed to do advertising here, but it's no advertising.
No,
of course.
It's also supporting us.
Personal opinion. So now, we talked about challenges, we talked about people in need, maybe also having a look from a different perspective. What support would your organization then need to fulfill your mission even better as you're doing now? I mean, you're doing a lot, but still, what support could maybe also ignite a further spark in this regard?
Well, on the bigger picture, the support would be like that the public opinion changes a bit, or like the that they're not like a political like tool. Refugees are not a tool to get your political agenda through. So if there would be already a change of, hey, that's people who need our help, and everyone can come into this situation. We had like Ukrainian clients who were like, I was not thinking that I might be in that situation. How would I have thought that? I'm like a mid-20-year-old girl living in Odessa. Why would I have thought that I would ever be in a situation of being a refugee? So, or we see with the earthquake, it can happen so fast that your whole life changes and you're really dependent on the help of others. So I think an open heart is already open hearts, open minds, trying to be a nice person to help other people is already a big step forward. Like, just be aware that everyone has their own issues, and then also following up when you have an open heart and open mind, even the political agenda being more like we help in our own way to make this the life of the people better, and as long as they need our help.
So having this macro perspective, basically, changing a little bit more in favor of supporting and not distancing oneself of some problems which arise in different areas of the world.
Yeah, because we saw last year how it's possible. It's possible. And we saw 2015, we saw 2016, and we saw it last year. People want to help. The Austrian civil society is great. There's still so many Ukrainians living in private housing. Like, also the politics are, like, the government is counting on it. They're really counting on it, that NGOs like ours are helping, that people are helping. And it's amazing to see what's possible when there's the will. And we need more will.
And if I am willing now, and if I have the will to support as maybe an Austrian citizen, as somebody who is not engaged formally in any organization, how could I do this? How could I best support? I mean, you said now with donations or volunteering maybe. Is there any other thing you would like to highlight here?
Yeah, I mean, donations obviously is the biggest help, volunteering as well in different places. I mean, it's it's always a help when you just like meet someone and be open to them, and also maybe like help them orientating. So it's like sometimes it's the little things. I see that with friends who I got friends with other with refugees, like, hey, it's just telling them, go there, do this, translating stuff, be there for them. Obviously, also just following us on our social media and maybe getting our newsletter, because sometimes when we're in need of something, that we can just put it in a newsletter and say, hey, now we need pots and pans. And then it's that when you're already in our bubble or in other bubbles, like also the same other NGOs doing that, like Train of Hope, for example, really were the first eight people here in Vienna helping. When you're just in the bubble and maybe I can't help now, I can't have this, but maybe in 3 weeks they're posting something like, hey, yeah, that's just here in my flat. I can bring it there. So just be aware, and like even in your nice Insta feed, maybe have some NGOs and organizations telling you, hey, we need help here. And you're like, oh, yeah, true. Just because have it in mind that sometimes you forget about how easy it's actually to help. That's always what Fobox said. It's everyone can help. Everyone.
I mean, what better way to end this interview? But as you might be aware, we at Inside Impact, we have this tradition that we ask all of our interview guests for a book recommendation. Do you have such a recommendation for our listeners?
Yes, obviously I have one.
Nice.
I tried like, do I do my private book? I was like, no, wait a second. If people really want to know who Ute Bock was, we have a book. It's called Ute Bock Superstar. Great branding. And so you can buy that in our bookshop. And as well, we have a book there. It's called Fluchtwege, which is describing, or like, it's a lot of pictures of the movement of the autumn of 2015. And I really like that book. To just get an impression like, yeah, wait a second, we helped a lot and we are able to help. And I really like to just look into this book and read some stories of people, how they helped, like Stephanie Sargnagel and so on, telling how it was the weeks in August, September, November, October, November in 2015, because that was such a powerful feeling. I was not working in refugee aid back then, but it was such a powerful feeling. It's like, hey, we can do something, and even if there are political problems, we here now can do something. And I think that's a great book to remind you of that feeling of 2015.
Wonderful. Well then, thank you so much for the work you're doing, and thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
It was a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you, Maren Riebe, for sharing your insights with us. If you want to know more about the organization Ute Bock Refugee Project, you can find a link to the website in the show notes of this episode. And if you would like to get in touch with us, please feel free to write an email to insideimpact@wu.ac.at or just follow us on Instagram, insideimpact with an underscore. We are very much looking forward to welcoming you to our next episode. Until then, see you soon and all the best from WU.